You're on final at your home field, everything looks beautiful, and then the windsaw catches your eye. It's sticking straight out, almost perpendicular to the runway. Your airplane starts drifting left. Your heart rate goes up, and right there in the next 10 seconds is the moment that separates a pilot who is ready from one who is hoping. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today we're talking about crosswind landings, the skill you will use on almost every flight you ever make, and the one that never stops demanding your attention. Before we get into it, a quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every milestone in your flying life. First solo private pilot check ride, instrument rating, whatever step you just conquered, they've got a coin that says you earned it. AviationSoul.com. Alright, crosswind landings. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. There's almost always a crosswind. A perfectly aligned wind straight down the runway is the exception, not the rule. So this isn't some exotic maneuver you pull out once in a while. This is a foundational skill, and the airman certification standards agree. The examiner is looking for you to maintain the extended center line throughout the approach and touchdown with minimal drift. That means you need a technique, and you need to practice it until it's second nature. There are two main methods for handling crosswinds on approach, the crab method and the side slip method, which most instructors call the wing low method. Some pilots use a combination, crabbing on final and then transitioning to wing low just before touchdown. Today I want to focus on the wing low technique because it's what most flight schools teach for light airplanes, and it's the one that will serve you from your first check ride all the way through your flying career. Let's walk through this together. You're on final approach, the wind is coming from your left. What happens if you do nothing? The wind pushes you to the right, you drift off centerline, you might land on the edge of the runway, or worse, in the grass or the lights. That's where pilots get hurt. The wing low method fixes this with two coordinated inputs. First, you lower the upwind wing. In our example, the wind is from the left, so you bank slightly to the left, into the wind. This creates a horizontal component of lift that counteracts the wind pushing you sideways. Think of it as leaning into the wind, like you'd lean into a strong gust walking down the street. But here's the catch. When you bank an airplane, it wants to turn. If you just lower the left wing without doing anything else, you'll start turning left and fly right off the extended center line in the other direction. So, simultaneously, you apply opposite rudder, right rudder in this case. The rudder keeps the nose aligned with the runway center line, while the aileron keeps you from drifting. Two inputs, aileron into the wind. Opposite rudder to keep the nose straight. That's the whole technique in its simplest form. Now let me tell you where students struggle, because understanding the concept is the easy part. Executing it is where the learning happens. The first problem is not committing to the aileron input. A lot of students will lower the wing just a tiny bit, almost apologetically, like they're afraid of the bank. But if the crosswind is strong, a timid correction won't cut it. The amount of bank you need is proportional to the crosswind component. A 5-knot crosswind might need just a degree or two. A 15-knot crosswind might need 10 or 15 degrees of bank. You have to match the correction to the conditions, and the only way to know if it's enough is to watch the centerline. If you're still drifting, you need more bank. The second problem is the rudder. Students either forget it entirely or apply it in the wrong direction. Remember, the rudder is doing the opposite of what you'd normally use in coordinated flight. In a normal turn, you'd apply rudder in the same direction as the bank. In a crosswind correction, you're applying rudder opposite to the bank. This feels wrong at first, your feet will fight you. That's normal. Keep practicing. Here's a mental model that might help. Think of your ailerons as controlling your position over the ground, left and right. Your rudder is controlling where the nose points. Those are two separate jobs. In a crosswind landing, they're working against each other on purpose, and that's okay. The third problem, and this is the one that gets people on check rides, is the transition to touchdown. You've been flying the approach with the wing low and opposite rudder, and now you're in the flare. What happens to the crosswind correction? The answer is it stays in. In fact, you might need to increase it as you slow down, because your control surfaces become less effective at lower speeds. You need more deflection to get the same result. And here's the part that feels really unnatural. In a crosswind landing, you're going to touch down on one wheel first. The upwind main wheel. That wing is low, remember? So the upwind wheel contacts the pavement, while the downwind wheel and the nose wheel are still in the air. A moment later, the downwind main settles. Then the nose wheel comes down. This is correct technique. It's supposed to feel a little weird. If you touch down on both mains simultaneously in a strong crosswind, it probably means you leveled the wings at the last second, which means you started drifting, which means your next stop might be the runway edge. Let me give you a scenario. You're flying a Cessna 172. The automated weather says winds are 210 at 12, gusting 18. You're landing on runway 240. Let's do the math in our heads. The runway heading is 240. The wind is from 210. That's a 30-degree difference. For a quick crosswind estimate, a 30-degree angle gives you roughly half the wind speed as a crosswind component. So your crosswind is about 6 knots, gusting to 9. That's well within the 172's demonstrated crosswind component of 15 knots. But here's the thing about gusts. A gust means the crosswind is not constant. It's going to change on you during the approach. You might have the correction dialed in perfectly at 300 feet, and then a gust hits and suddenly you need more bank, more rudder, or less of both. This is why crosswind landings require you to stay active on the controls all the way to touchdown. It is not a set-it-and-forget-it situation. Your hands and feet are making small adjustments constantly. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training about gusty crosswinds specifically. Add half the gust factor to your approach speed. If your normal approach speed is 65 knots and the wind is gusting 10 knots above the steady state, add 5 knots. Come in at 70. That extra speed gives you a margin against a sudden decrease in wind speed, which could cause you to drop below your target speed and lose the energy you need to flare properly. Your instructor might have a slightly different rule of thumb, and that's fine. The point is to account for the gusts, not ignore them. Now let's talk about the go-around decision, because it connects directly to crosswind landings. Every pilot has a personal crosswind limit, and if you're a student or a freshly certificated private pilot, that limit should be conservative. There is no shame in deciding that the crosswind is too strong for your skill level today. In fact, that decision is exactly what the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, wants to see. Good aeronautical decision-making means knowing your limits and respecting them. If you're on short final and the crosswind correction is maxed out, meaning you've got full aileron deflection into the wind and full opposite rudder, and you're still drifting, that airplane is telling you something. It's telling you that the crosswind exceeds what it can handle in this configuration. Go around. Pick a runway more aligned with the wind if one is available, or divert to an airport with a better option. That's not failure. That's command authority. The ACS lists specific standards for crosswind landings. You need to touch down smoothly with no side drift. The longitudinal axis of the airplane should be aligned with the runway direction, and you need to maintain crosswind correction throughout the rollout. That last part is important and often overlooked. After touchdown, you're still in a crosswind. Keep that aileron deflected into the wind. As you decelerate, you'll actually want to increase the aileron deflection because the controls are becoming less effective as you slow down. Full aileron into the wind by the time you're at taxi speed. This keeps the wind from getting under the upwind wing and tipping you. Let me give you a practice drill. Next time you go out with your instructor, ask to do a series of crosswind landings with increasing wind components. Start on a day with a light crosswind, maybe 5 knots. Get comfortable with the technique, feel the aileron and rudder inputs. Notice what the center line does when you adjust. Then try it on a day with 8 or 10 knots of crosswind, then 12. Build your skill gradually. Don't jump straight to maximum demonstrated crosswind your second time trying this. And while you're practicing, pay attention to what the airplane is telling you. The sight picture out the windscreen is your primary reference. You should be looking at the far end of the runway, not at the ground right in front of you. That long view gives you the best sense of whether you're drifting, whether the nose is aligned, and whether your approach path is stable. If you stare at the numbers right in front of the airplane, everything happens too fast, and your corrections will be late and exaggerated. One more thing, wind socks and wind tees on the field are your friends. Before you even enter the pattern, look at them. They'll tell you what to expect, and keep checking them on downwind, base, and final. Wind can shift, especially on gusty days. A crosswind on final might become a tailwind on base if the wind shifts while you're in the pattern. Stay aware. I pulled this lesson together from the FAA's Airplane Flying Handbook, the ACS for Private Pilot, and a whole lot of time spent watching students figure this out in the flare. If you want to dig deeper, the Airplane Flying Handbook Chapter 8 has an excellent breakdown with diagrams. That's your tip for today. Next time the windsock is showing a crosswind, don't dread it. It's a chance to sharpen the skill you'll use more than almost any other aileron, into the wind, opposite rudder, and fly it all the way to the ground. I'm Pattern. You can find more at radiohanger.com. Now go fly.